Good evening and welcome to special coverage from WBAA News of Election 2019. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. We're glad you're with us this evening. I'm here in studio with Zachary Bale, who is running for mayor of West Lafayette. And during the next half an hour, we will take your questions and put them to him, as well as some of our own. We're having this conversation on Facebook Live this evening as well. Go to facebook.com/WBAA Radio, and you can see video of our conversation. And if there's something you'd like to ask, you can feel free to write a question in the comment box there as well. Mr. Bale, good evening. Thanks for being with us. We really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, happy to be here, Stan.
So let's get right into it, and I want to kind of start at the beginning, if we can. What made you run in the first place? This is a candidacy that kind of came up in the middle of the summer, a little bit after the filing deadline. You got your signatures in just before the deadline to do that. What made you decide that that was something you wanted to pursue?
Yeah, so I mean, the same reasons why I decided to run are based on the platform as well, and I really wanted to reconnect with the community, engage the community, and bring them into that civics process. And as we all know, the Mayor Dennis was running uncontested, and in order to have that conversation going forward, we needed to have someone in the race. I've been an active civic participant for over a decade here in the greater Lafayette area and wanted to make a goal for that, and that goal in this particular case was the mayoralship of West Lafayette.
You decided between this position and potentially running for a city council seat as well. How did you decide what it was that you wanted to run for? Was it the scope of the job? Was it running against a particular person or for a particular seat? Tell us a little about that thought process.
Yeah, so that's a great question. I've gotten that a lot during the process of when I was deciding what position I would run for. And really the difference is a lot of what I want to do for the city of West Lafayette is more on the executive operational side of things, the day-to-day, as opposed to the legislative side. And so being a city councilor is an incredibly important position, but a lot of what I want to accomplish for the city is more on that operational side, those day-to-day type items, that community engagement, the development, and that proactive transparency.
Let's get into that a little bit. You have talked a lot about government transparency as part of your platform. I think most people would agree that's a sensible goal. That's a goal that a lot of people would think of as one that should be high-minded for city governments. Let me sort of take the opposite side of that for a second. Are there points that even you, who have been so forward about your push for more transparency, can see that maybe there are places where city government needs to play its cards a little close to the vest? Maybe it's bidding processes for economic development or things like that. Where do you draw the line, I guess, on what should be out in the public and what should be able to be held back at least a little bit?
I don't know if there's a hard line on the transparency aspects. It's really a case-by-case basis. But what I look at under APRA, Access to Public Records Act, that governs records in Indiana, there are mandatory exemptions that state the different government agencies can't release information. And then there's around three dozen or so discretionary exemptions. And so those are at the pleasure of the particular body. And too often I see in my own work, myself, or I'm also president of the Indiana Coalition for Open Government, so we have a lot of citizens, journalists, organizations write us when they are getting frustrated access to government documents. And a lot of those discretionary exemptions get exercised almost consistently to frustrate access. And so there can always – Indiana's a partial disclosure state. And so, yes, if there are particular items, most notably for the State Street project, we were told that a lot of the bid documents could not be released until one was accepted. However, we learned after the fact that there was a non-collusion agreement that was signed by all the contractors inside there. And so even if information was released, those contractors couldn't use that information legally inside their bid. And so pieces of that, we were more concerned what was actually being done along State Street. And so pieces of those bids could have been released. They could have been released partially and made available. And so I think an administration could, instead of doing a binary decision, they could actually release some of the information, because the public does want to know on some of those large projects what's actually happening, what's the decision-making process that's behind, and more importantly, I think, what's the decision-making process of what we're not doing.
Is some of that, though, just the cost of doing business in this day and age? Is some of that just the expectations of the people bidding on the project, or maybe if it's a public-private partnership between multiple government agencies and the private sector, that people want to be making sure they're on the same page? Is some of that just kind of the way things are done, do you think?
You mean not disclosing it?
Sure.
I think that's the standard practice we're in now. Too often, I think if you ask politely for the information and you're told no, that's when most people just give up and they wait until something goes through. What they'll do is follow up. You'll ask for the partial disclosure. And then hopefully that information, some of that gets out. That way people can actually organize around the issue, because as we all know, there's been plenty of times that the public gets involved right at the very end of a decision-making process. And so most of the time, it's not genuine engagement. It's more of a box-checking maneuver. That way they can say, oh, we told the public, we allowed them to air their grievances. But in reality, we can't incorporate any of that because the contract or the bids are already in. Everything's already not set in stone, but it's fairly firm as much as it can be.
The ink is at least drying, if not completely dry.
Correct, correct.
So let's talk a little bit about development and growth, because I think that's going to be a pretty substantial discussion point in West Lafayette, regardless of who is the mayor over the next 4 years. What are your views? Let's start with State Street, because it is such a focal point of what the city is trying to do. There's been a lot of talk about, are we going to have more high-rises? How are we going to redevelop what is now Chauncey Hill Mall? What is that going to look like in 4 to 5 years? What is your vision for that?
So I think right now I was happy to see that the administration at least had a moratorium on more student housing. You know, we saw aggressive growth, and you're right, in my conversations with people around the city, everyone's looking at that as we've had tremendous explosive growth in the village that's unproven at this point. Everything just came online. Some came online a little bit better than others this particular season. And
the occupancy rate, though, is pretty high.
It is fairly high. We haven't seen the full report yet. And so what is it going to look like when the remaining buildings come online for Purdue, since they have their interest and they're developing other student housing, where a lot of the conversations that have been going around the downtown plan especially, and we had a lot of groups write us, is what's being done to create affordable housing in the downtown area? And so I don't know what it would look like in 4 years. Based on the West Lafayette downtown plan, depending on how aggressive people want to get, there's several downtown core areas designated within that plan proposal that foreseeably we could see dozens of more 10-story buildings potentially, I mean, if the development interest is there in the proposal. And I don't know if that's actually sustainable growth for the city. Let's say
you get elected and a developer comes to you and says, Mr. Mayor, we'd like you to consider putting up another 10, 12-story building or two or three or whatever. How do you determine whether you think that's something you would advocate for?
I'd have to know more about the development. Who's their target market with it? What's going to be the rent range on those particular apartments? What will the commercial? It has to have commercial in there, in my mind. And mixed use is definitely the way to go. That's how you build up new urban cores. And so with some of those other questions, how is it, like I said, how is it actually going to be developed? Who's the target that's going for? What else is around it? And so that was one question that came up with the downtown proposal, is they had the deference policy where if you're near a historic building, you can only be double the size of that historic building. However, I raised concern at the August 29th meeting and then subsequently at the Ordinance Committee meeting. Well, what about on these downtown core areas? If someone develops a 10-story building there first, is the expectation that all future developments also have to be 10 stories or 8 stories or near that particular height? Or the flip, if someone gets in there with a 4-story building, is now that block a smaller block? And so I think we need to be very strategic with who and how dense we go in those areas. And again, it'll have to be a case by case, and knowing more of those details, how much are we fitting the rest of the plan in there, the will of the public, what's going on in the community, how much are we growing in other areas.
What about who invests? There's been some talk about the fact that there are right now a couple, three, four developers that have done the lion's share of the work along State Street, especially as you get to the Chauncey Hill Mall area, the near campus area. What about the fact that there are some people who are saying, you know, are we concentrating power in too few developers? Do we need to have more hands in how this is developed? What is your view on who should be in control of that?
I definitely think we should be focusing on how do we get more local developers involved first and foremost. I often have heard in conversations, are we developing in such a way that we're preventing local dollars and local developers from being here? We're having a lot of different firms from Chicago come in and invest. And if it's a certain density and the people just don't have the capital to do it locally, well, now we're getting that outside money. And that's going to happen in any community. There's going to be some amount of money coming from development and farther away. However, are we making it conducive at all for local development? Thankfully, we have the Highvine by local developers here with WIDA. And I'd like to see more of that. And there's different property owners that own the property, but those are not always the ones that develop it. And I don't know in the conversations that I've had with developers if they can actually afford doing a 10-story building. And so again, if a 10-story gets built in there, how is that going to affect future development? Is that going to essentially price out all local developers who have maybe have been here for generations? And not that I want to see protectionism of sort, but generally those investors, those developers have skin in the game here in Greater Lafayette. And so they are approachable. They're here. You can have conversations with them. And you can develop alongside them as opposed to having an outside entity, where we've seen several of these properties actually sell during the process of the development. I think we saw that with the Fuse building when it first came
in. Right, shortly after it opened.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get to a question that came in from one of our listeners, Brian. And by the way, if you want to put a question to West Lafayette mayoral candidate Zachary Bale, you can do that a couple of different ways. We're on Facebook Live. You can go to facebook.com/WBAA radio and you can leave a question there. You can also email questions to ask@WBAA.org. We've got another 15 or so minutes for you to get those questions in. So Brian says, Purdue is the third city in Greater Lafayette. What is the proper balance between the city of West Lafayette's autonomy and the needs of Purdue? Which is the dog and which is the tail, he says.
Well, I would definitely put in there PRF, Purdue Research Foundation, too. I mean, they're a major property owner here in Tippecanoe County. And so they're not really the other city. Yes, they were annexed, and so technically not their own. But there is a memorandum of understanding where essentially they maintain all their autonomy. They're maintaining their roads, and they have their own police and fire and so on and so forth.
Right. So they do have some ability to operate kind of as their own entity. And heck, they're a $2 billion a year industry, the university is.
Largest employer in Tippecanoe County. I'd like to see more of a partnership there where, yes, Brian is not alone in asking that question of who's calling the shots, if you will, in the area when it's being developed. Now, this isn't to say you would do things directly that would negatively impact Purdue, but I think in the past we have seen some of the development, especially along State Street, obviously that has helped Purdue. Purdue has had a lot of plans. PRF had a lot of plans for what they wanted to do there, and that helped move that along. And other places in the city, they feel neglected by that. They see that there hasn't been much focus north in the city. Once you go above State Street, we have the Aquatic Center now. But what other development really have we started seeing up in that particular area? And so I think making sure that there's a lot of accountability and transparency around those processes. There is the joint board. However, most of what they dealt with is State Street. I know there's been some ancillary items that they've had go before them. But I would like to see more information come out. That way the public does know what particular decisions are involved in that process. We just saw the Saab tax abatement go before the city council and get voted upon at this last time. But that was PRF is renting the land, I believe, to Saab. And so it's a very complex web between everyone. And so I would just push for more accountability, transparency around those communications and engagements and bring more people to the table.
So to Brian's question, I think one of the things he's also asking about is sort of deference. how much deference should the mayor of West Lafayette give to the 800-pound gorilla that they have just annexed? What sorts of rights does Purdue have, and what sorts of responsibilities would and should the mayor of West Lafayette hold Purdue to as a good citizen?
I think definitely in their area and areas that are directly abutting the campus, you know, we should have some sympathies for development along there. But seeing Purdue expand continuously beyond what would people would call traditionally campus, and so we're starting to get more of these research park districts, we're starting to get more of these aerospace districts, or however you want to look at them, where they're starting to blend residential in there, commercial, general commercial, industry. We should just be very mindful of what that looks like, what kind of agreements. I don't know the whole backstory on the tax abatement, but I would imagine Purdue and PRF were involved in those conversations, along with the chamber and Saab and the city. And so, yeah, we want to see the community thrive and be prosperous, but not to the detriment of the rest of the city.
West Lafayette is, of course, also one of the more compact cities that you will find very high population density and a population that has grown very quickly, even if you discount the taking in of the university to the official population count of the city. And so there are some people who are asking about annexation and about whether the city's boundaries should be expanded north or west, for instance. What is your view of whether that's a sensible thing to try to pursue in the next 4 years?
I haven't thought about that. I would need to see a compelling reason why. I know in the original 2013, it was probably 2012, 2013 annexation talks, because it happened in 2013. What's the appetite of the people there? And so, you know, we've built up our assessed valuation here in the core, and that's usually why annexation happens, is you want to get some more value. That way it's a taxable base that you can bring in new revenues. And so if that's something that we desire and the people want it there, sure, we'll pursue it. But I think there has to be a hunger for it, as opposed to coming from top down where the city says, oh, no, we're going to annex this. Well, what are the reasons behind it? What do the residents want in those particular areas?
But if you're the mayor and you're looking at a growing population and a city where there's a number of people wanting to invest, wanting to bring money from the outside, which is not always the case. There are a lot of cities that would love to have the sorts of options that West Lafayette's had the last 3 or 4 years in terms of the investment. Do you need to be sort of forward-looking and take a look at what you can do to create more places where there is at least the possibility of development, whether it's retail development, whether it's another housing subdivision, to be able to accommodate all of the other factors on the ground at the moment and how those might project into the future?
I think that's a great question. I would look at it more from a densification standpoint, as opposed to sprawling out the city in order to achieve opportunities for that development within the city. I would like to see us do more. I know everyone brings up smart growth. There's a great book, West Lafayette Public Library has it, the Sprawl Repair Manual, where it talks about these different densification programs. And you see a little hinting of some of that in the West Lafayette downtown plan proposal. We have a lot of strip malls in West Lafayette. Sagamore Parkway is riddled with them. I think there's a lot of opportunities where if we encourage and entice and incentivize people to develop in those areas, we can see some of that densification where we can increase not only our value to expand services, but then also build these urban cores that these neighborhoods are really desiring. They want walkable places. They want bikeable places. Brokerage Brewery opening up, I think, has been a huge asset by Barbary Heights there. Every time I go in, it's a happening place, and that's very walkable. It's right there at the end of a street, and I don't know too many other people that are walking through the entire Sagamore Parkway strip mall landscape. And so sadly, that development exists currently. But I think, much like we're hearing the possible future for the Chauncey Hill Mall, we can do that densification elsewhere in the city.
In terms of how the city grows and what it has in it, name for me, if you would, an amenity the city doesn't currently have that you think, if you became mayor in this year's election, you would push for sometime in the next 4 years because you find it to be so important that the city develops X. What would that thing be if you had to put something at the top of that list of this is the amenity I think West Lafayette needs next? And it can be a building, it can be a concept. Like, where would you put those energies?
Well, I mean, first that comes to mind is there's a deep concern in the community about what are we going to do for our community centers. You know, Morton is converting, in essence, to a city hall. The public space is very low that will be in there. The aquatic center, it will have some public space, but most of it is the pool and there's workout spaces. And so we really don't have, outside of the West Lafayette Public Library, other community spaces that people can go and engage. And so I'm not saying have a large community center, but probably have some smaller community centers that people can engage and use and develop the programs that we've had for decades, whether in the arts, dance, Wabash Area Lifelong Learners, and build those into communities, maybe reutilize some of the larger parks, put some internal structures. That's been a common conversation where a lot of people are frustrated that we have these dark times in a lot of our public buildings where they see places, mainly co-working spaces. Sadly, we lost the Anvil, is now closed here in the old University Church over by the Union. But Matchbox co-working is 24/7. The Anvil is 24/7. You're vetted, and you have a fob, and there's cameras, and so it's monitored. But we have a lot of municipal buildings that, through creative design of the building, we can have 24-hour access places. And there's plenty of people in our community that would probably utilize those spaces. And so I would like to see and put some effort towards providing those spaces for people in the community to use.
You're listening to special coverage of Election 2019. I'm Stan Jastrzebski of WBAA News. I'm here with Zachary Bale, running for mayor of West Lafayette in next month's election. If you have questions for him, you've got about 10 minutes to get those in. Send emails to ask@WBAA.org, or you can view our live stream of this on Facebook Live. Go to facebook.com/WBAA radio, and you can put your questions in the chat there. We talked a little bit about the population of the city, which has been growing. What do you see as the city's message to the residents themselves? Should the city continue to grow at the rate at which it has in terms of its population, regardless of whether the boundaries of the city change, like we were talking about a minute ago? Would you, as mayor, try to encourage that fairly steep population growth curve that we've had, or do you think it needs to be looked at a little bit because we are so densely populated, that because real estate prices in West Lafayette significantly higher than just across the river? How do you view what the population itself should do in the next 4 to 5 years if you had your druthers?
Yeah, I would definitely evaluate it where we are. I don't have access to all the data or the projections or the visuals around that. I'm a very visual learner in that regard. And so a lot of this is information gathering. And so I am definitely not in favor of sprawl. And so building more subdivisions on farmland is not something that I would definitely celebrate. I'm in favor of looking at the areas that we, for lack of a better term, poorly developed in the past. A lot of this is legacy, 70s, 80s, early 90s.
Like what?
The Sagamore Parkway bypass is a perfect example. We're getting ready to develop along 231 again, which is supposed to be another bypass. And you're not supposed to develop along bypasses because you're bypassing things. They're not destinations. And
trying to get cars not to stop.
Exactly. And so that's a common strategy in development, is because now it gives you a major thoroughfare to have supply chain infrastructure to build strip malls, giant box stores, that sort of thing. Along that, we saw the Meijer come up along 52 there. Menards has been up there for a while. And it's no coincidence that we're developing in those particular areas. And so I would like, which we haven't tried, I would like for us to seriously look at and see what it would take, have those conversations with developers of densifying elsewhere. And I'm not talking about the densification that we've seen here in the village of, you know, 10, 12, 16-story buildings, but having some, when we redevelop the area where the car wash is and the IU urgent care, there isn't an apartment over there. You know, that was an opportunity where we could have had a nice three-story building with some apartments above, sustain the bottom, build a small urban core. You have two neighborhoods right there that could have fed right into it, but instead you have a very loud car wash. And that was by right development. They could develop a car wash in that particular area. But I'm just very curious, what kind of conversation and encouragement did the city give to the layout of that particular area?
Let me get to a question that's come in on Facebook. Sheila writes, are we making our city accessible to low-income people? How can that be done? And I guess I'll add, if you were to become mayor, how would you work on that problem?
Well, it definitely. I think everyone, it's no shock to them that their property taxes drastically went up in a number of areas across the city. This last round is mainly around land, it seemed like. And so, yes, values are really going up in a lot of places, pricing people out. In going about that, I think one way would be to repurpose and look at other areas and see what kind of developments we can put in there. And everything doesn't have to be luxury style. I think we saw that for the appeal to cash in on the student demographic, where they're willing to pay for some reason $1,000, $1,200, $1,500 for a bedroom in an apartment. And it would be talking with developers, finding people that we could discuss, collaborate, incentivize to build affordable rental units, and then also home developers in the same way, make sure that they have it where they would make it accessible for people of a variety of incomes. You might not be able to live in the quote-unquote downtown area here in the village, but if we build other urban cores, they would become desirable, much like other larger cities where you live in a neighborhood, and that neighborhood generally has a downtown strip. It may not be huge, but there's usually a cafe, there's grocery availability, maybe a couple pubs, some niche retail outlets. And I think it's incredibly critical to have apartments above those. That way you can help sustain those places below.
Let me ask you just a couple of general questions in our last couple of minutes here. You got a political role model? You got somebody who you're looking at your political career as it sort of starts here, and you're thinking maybe I could go in that direction?
No, I mean, to be honest, I think just other citizens that have stepped up and really seriously engaged the civic process. You know, there was, I worked for a number of years to get the audio of a lot of the different boards and councils online, and consuming a lot of that audio, a lot of faceless people. I would hear their name, they'd state their address, but the fact that you knew they were there at every meeting, they had a very distinct voice. And so just knowing that there was other people that actually cared and would question and inquire and be in attendance, because anything that isn't monitored usually will start doing what it wants to do, as opposed to, in our case, as mayor, you're a public servant, is what the public wants to do. And so, yeah, anyone who's ever, I guess, really engaged on the civic process is something that really inspires me to do so.
Let me ask about those conversations with some of the elected boards. I wanted to ask you how you think you'd work with the city council. You had an exchange with Peter Bunder, the council president, earlier this year, where he said, look, while you're a candidate, we're not going to allow you as much time to talk at public meetings as perhaps you're accustomed to. I wouldn't say that exchange became testy, but you were obviously a little bit unhappy with that decision on their part. How would you work with that group of people whom you have obviously come to know in a slightly different way?
I would engage them as any other body. I know we have to, we're doing two distinct roles, but we're pushing on the same boulder. It would be the same genuine conversations that we've had in the past. I've known Peter for a number of years. He's my representative on the city council. I live in District 2. And I think it's healthy to have debate and discourse. I'm not sure, a lot of us were taken aback by that particular exchange. I'm not sure where that exactly came from. But no, I don't see any issue working with the city council. I have a great rapport with all of them. And I think, if anything, we would be able to get into some of these issues and maybe actually have some of that discourse that apparently the community is hungry for, because that's what we're talking about when I go door to door.
Let me let you leave us with this. What do you think you'd bring to the job of mayor that the city may be lacking?
I think that the push and the excitement to have that genuine engagement, that communication around all that we do civically, and making sure that we really know how to use the tools that are available in today's day and age around the internet, social media, and having some fun with the whole entire process.
All right. Mr. Bale, half an hour has gone awful fast.
It has.
Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate you coming in, and good luck as Election Day nears.
Thank you very much. Appreciate being here.
This has been special coverage of Election 2019 here on WBAA News. Remember that you'll be able to find this conversation archived at our website, WBAA.org. And if you follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/WBAA Radio, we will put up the Facebook Live video of that in the coming hours and days as well. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks so much for being with us, and have a good rest of your day.